We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. He is a biochemist with a great history. He's so prepared to talk about this today. Don, DNA is old hat for you. We've talked about this many times, but this is some new research, and it kind of sheds some new light on the relationship, and I say that tentatively, between monkeys and humans. Now, I've always thought monkeys look kind of like us, or chimps, and you know, two arms, and they've got opposing thumbs, and they've got central nervous systems. Yeah, I've got, yeah.
Well, yes, there are some.
Monkeys have working thumbs.
Similarities.
And we both tend to like bananas. What else do you need? We obviously come from the chimps.
Yeah, or orangutans, or, you know, some
that's
other
right.
ape.
The great, there's a category called great apes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're just apes in general. That was the general thinking for a long, long time from an evolutionary point of view. So what we're talking about today, though, the new research is showing that this DNA sequencing that they've done is making monkeys out of the evolutionists.
Uh-huh.
Now, let me explain a little bit about that.
Please, well, let me just let that soak in a minute. Oh, I like that. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, in the past, when DNA sequencing was done originally, what they did was they chopped up the DNA into small pieces, and then they analyzed the small pieces and then tried to put it back together with hopefully some overlapping little pieces so that they could get the DNA genome. But they have now perfected the technique where they can leave the DNA alone pretty much and actually sequence very long sequences. And
of a sidebar here, because I had to research some of this, but DNA research really started back in the early 50s, I'm told, with the discovery of the double helix. But technology, there were no computers really in existence then, not like we know them today. So it took technology to 40, 50, 60 years, I guess, to get them to this point where they could actually see more of the DNA. Would that be accurate?
Well, technology certainly has advanced, and instrumentation has advanced. They used to do this by electrophoresis to separate the pieces, and then you had to kind of compare them with samples. And so we have advanced far beyond that now, where we can, I'm assuming, I didn't look into research particularly, but can sequence very long sequences of DNA, which they couldn't do before. And so we've got new techniques, and I can remember back in the day when they first sequenced or said that they sequenced monkey DNA and they compared it to human DNA. The astonishing result was that, hey, 98% of the sequence is homologous. That means pretty much the same. So, yeah, obviously we evolved from monkeys. Well, that research was skewed quite a bit. It didn't take creationists very long to pick the study and say, hey, you know, your study is flawed, because what they sequenced was the coding regions, and guess what? We have similar enzymes. Okay, so what? You know, we got similar enzymes. But that doesn't mean that the sequences are exactly the same. And indeed, they aren't the same, as this new study points out. The new study, and they did this with the Y chromosome. And so you got the Y chromosomes of humans, and then you got the Y chromosomes of chimpanzees and gibbons. And so they did it with a couple of ape species, and they then paired their results between the humans and the great apes, the chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans. And what they found out was that not only are they not very similar, the similarity is only like 26%. So we've now dropped with new technology from 98%, which was the original result, down to 26%. So we're not anywhere near a chimpanzee or a monkey. So why the Y chromosome as opposed to, let's just look at the X chromosome or some other chromosome and see what the homologous is between those? Well, the Y chromosome is the chromosome that's thought to be least changing, or in quotes, mutated. They would say evolved, but mutated over the course of time. So it is pretty much protected from being mutated and is pretty much intact over time, as opposed to...
Well, that's logical, because it seems to me if they had really old DNA samples of humans and great apes, they might have been similar, but then eons of time had go by and they take modern samples and they could be far apart. So that would be logical, I think, to take the Y chromosome. Makes sense to me.
Right. And the Y chromosome doesn't involve recombination like some of the other chromosomes do. So it's pretty much, you know, intact from the very beginning. Of course, you do have mutations that would change it a little bit. But be that as it may, so they're finding that the chimps and the gibbons and the great apes are not like man. But they found a couple of other things. They did the study, compared it to chickens, and lo and behold, if we compare our DNA with a chicken, we get about the same percentage. So, you know, we are as close to the chicken as we are to the great apes. And, of course, that's, you know, ludicrous. Well, no one would even begin to imagine that we are related to the chickens in any manner, except that, you know, obviously some folks in Washington obviously have probably chicken brains. But be that as it may, you know, we're not a chicken. And so with this new technology,
I think I know who you're referring to now that I think about it here. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not mentioning any names, but it's probably obvious to the whole world in this case. But when they did comparisons between, let's say, orangutans and gorillas, they were, when the chimpanzee was compared to a gorilla or the chimpanzee was compared to the orangutan, it was they only had 19% and 21% homology between those species. So even within the ape species, you know, you would expect, well, gee, if they evolved from one another, we should be able to see that this is, you know, pretty close to 90 or 90 plus percent homology between the two species. But in these cases, obviously, they're not. So what does that say? That says that a chimpanzee is different from the gorilla or the orangutan, and then they did not evolve from one another. So they are separate species.
Unique creations. Now, that kind of blows apart the whole great ape family, because obviously they were grouped together because there are certain physical resemblances that had nothing to do with DNA.
Yes, exactly. So because they look similar, therefore they were bunched together. So their phenotype, that's called the phenotype. The phenotype, you know, looks, you know, a chimpanzee or a gorilla. A gorilla just looks like a big chimpanzee. But indeed, they're different created kinds in the creationist world. And indeed, if you look at those and you try to mate a chimpanzee with a gorilla, or a chimpanzee with an orangutan, or an orangutan with a gorilla, then they don't mate. So that tells you that their chromosomes are so different from one another that they can't combine and produce an offspring. And so the creationists knew this from a very long time, that these were different kinds of animals. And, you know, a different kind we've spoken about in previous programs is if you have two animals that look similar, but if they can't mate, then they're probably different kinds of animals, because God created them individually, as opposed to saying, well, okay, I'm going to let this animal diverge into this other animal. And indeed, we don't really see that in the animal kingdom. Or insect kingdom, or anything else. I mean, we don't see this one kind going into another kind. There is absolutely, you know, no evidence of it other than people saying that those look alike, so therefore they must
actually
be similar.
The, in a sense, there's evidence, because one of the articles on the history of DNA goes back to 5000 BC, when it wasn't actually DNA research, but it's when humans started combining strains of plants and animals to get a certain kind of outcome, to interbreed. So if I think of what a mule comes from a donkey and a horse, it produces like a third critter that is not like the mother and father, which suggests that DNA is not very similar, even between, say, donkeys and horses. I don't know that for a fact, but humans detected and tried to work with it thousands of years ago.
Right. Well, donkey. Being in the offspring of a horse and a mule, obviously, it produced an offspring. But that offspring, you can't breed. I mean, it doesn't.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, you don't get more donkeys from donkeys.
And the question is, what did occur in nature? Or was this engineered by human beings in order to get donkeys?
Well, yeah, that's a big big question. Or did the horse or did the mule diverge from the horse, so much that while it can mate one time, it can't, propagate that crossbreed, if you will.
Well, and you've used the word kind many times, and we've talked about that before, but define kind.
Well, a kind of animal is what God, maybe the best definition is what God created in the first place. So we got humankind, but before that you had the birds, different types of birds, and you can't even, make a finch into a parrot. I mean, that's, they're two different kinds, and a kind in general, although it's not a completely steadfast rule, a kind, two kinds that are the same, they can crossbreed with one another. So take a wolf, for example, and a dog. Well, the wolf and a dog can breed together and produce a wolf dog. We call it the wolf something different from a dog,
but they're both canines. Would that define the family, define the kind then as canines?
It would define the kind, and if you're talking about biology, the kind more resembles a family as opposed to the species, certainly not down at the species level, because you can have different species of finches, for example, which is what Charles Darwin saw on the Galapagos Islands, and then started this whole thing of saying, well, all these evolved from one another, and they didn't evolve, they're just variations within the same kind, because of climate differences in availability of water and availability of food. The population actually shifted from small beaks to big beaks, depending on which part of the island you were on. And so the DNA was still there to make a small-beaked finch, or vice versa. And so while we get variations within a kind, which we typically call species, the kind is much broader in general. But if you take, for example, here in the United States, you've got a northern jackrabbit, and then you got a southern jackrabbit, and then in the middle part of the country, you got a central jackrabbit. Now, the central jackrabbit can mate with the northern jackrabbit and produce offspring, and the central jackrabbit can mate with the southern jackrabbit and produce offspring, but the southern jackrabbit cannot produce offspring from the northern jackrabbit, and all that means is that their DNA has diverged enough that you can't produce offspring from them.
Still, they're of the same kind.
But they're still of the same kind. They're all of the same kind, because you have this intermediate one, this central jackrabbit, if you will, that can mate with both of them. And so the creationists would say, well, they're all the same kind of jackrabbit, but they're different from a regular rabbit. And so that's pretty much what a kind is. And so when you get to the flood and you're saying, you know, you look around the world, and if you look, if you're looking at species of different animals and you're saying, okay, can all of these species be put in the ark, two of each, that would be a tremendous number, even though the number of animals have decreased, the number of different kinds of animals have decreased since the flood. It's estimated that there were probably 15,000 or so, give or take, different kinds of animals that got onto the flood and that God brought to Noah to put on the ark. There were plenty of room. There's plenty of room in the ark. I mean, the ark was tremendous. It was three floors and could easily handle that many animals and handle the food that it took to pretty much house them almost for a year on the ark. And so if you're looking at kinds, you don't lose the genetic material, the genetic information, if you're looking at kinds. But if you're trying to get down to the species, then you would lose information from one species to another. So hopefully that made it clear as mud as to the difference between a kind and a species. But
well, this new research is certainly making a difference now for some long-held assumptions, which we've argued against for a long time. And it looks like, in fact, the new research does indeed make monkeys of the evolutionists. This is simply not true, that there's a relationship, a DNA relationship, a biological relationship between chimps or the so-called great apes family. They need to redefine, I guess.
The great apes wouldn't be a kind, because if they don't breed with one another, they're not kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're totally different. They're in a different family, if you will. And orangutans are different than the gorillas, yeah. And the gorillas are different from...
I would like to have been part of the DNA research team that did the gorillas. And I could see the director of the team saying, Smedley, go get a Y chromosome from Gargantuan over there, would you? Would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, he'll just let you take his
pay
blood.
Pay your bonus,
I mean, no
sure.
Problem.
Yeah. Sure. David, you had a thought?
Well, you know, I was trying to think of when I was thinking that eventually you're going to get around to saying how many kinds of animals were on the ark, and I remember the number 1600. I looked it up on the Ark Encounter website, and it says 1,398.
Okay, well, there you go.
And the total number of animals was 6,744.
So that would have been easily accommodated, on the Ark. And that, by the way, you know, included what we call today dinosaurs. Of course, you have small dinosaurs and you have big dinosaurs, but, right. You know, you didn't have to put an old dinosaur on the ark. You could have gotten an adolescent, for example. All you needed was a pair of animals that could mate, so that they just had to be old enough to be able to propagate, and so you didn't have to have these tremendous brachiosauruses or other, you know, tyrannosauruses, no, rexes.
I just gotta conclude if God called
to have a rex on the ark, but it didn't have to be so large that it's gonna eat other animals.
If God called for it to happen, he would have made a way for it to happen, and that's a safe place to start analyzing this whole thing. Is recognizing the power of God and responding to what he tells you to do. He's going to give you a hand.
Yes, I remember from going through the ark, the model that they had for the dinosaur kind was probably about the size of an elephant, a small elephant.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't look like an elephant, of course. It looked like and I don't remember what it looked like, but that was the dinosaur kind that could result when the two paired and produced offspring. Eventually, the dinosaur would show up out of them.
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah. So you didn't have to have the big ones. And by the way, you know, from you know, it's thought from the time of creation, or certainly from the time of fall, to the flood was a little over 1,400 or 1,600 years, 14, I don't remember exactly, years since that time. So the dinosaur, or let's say a brachiosaurus, could grow and continued to grow for that many years. It didn't necessarily mean that they would die off, and they had pretty long lifespans. And so those creatures would be extremely large, but you didn't have to take one that's 1,400 years old in order to put on the ark. It would be much smaller. And the other interesting thing is that we now know, for example, you see all these movies. No, you don't see so much of them anymore. But when I was in college and maybe a little younger, you had these movies of the dinosaurs and the Tyrannosaurus Rex coming after people and eating other creatures. Well, we now know that the Tyrannosaurus Rex, for example, was a scavenger. So it didn't come after live animals. It came after dead animals. And was kind of a cleanup crew of large dead animals. And so, you know, it was more like a vulture than it was a hawk, which would come after live animals. So our, you know, as we learn more and more and do more research, we're finding that the biblical story of creation, and I use the story term loosely, is more fact than fiction. And indeed, we can trust what the Bible says from the very beginning. And so if we learn anything from these studies here about DNA, is that the Word of God is faithful and true, just like the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords.
And as we've said many times, Genesis, you need to respect it for the history that's there. It is not meant to be a scientific analysis or explanation, but it is history. And that's a great starting point for scientists to begin their research, to start with the evidence presented there as history, and then take it into the realm of science. And if you can, go ahead and prove it. Play with your microscopes and your DNA, and you're going to discover that the history was accurate. And that's what's happened with this new research, and I think that's fine. And yes, DNA research has made monkeys out of evolutionists. So
once again,
and if you don't like that, Don Clark lives in Garden Valley. Write him a letter and let him know. Okay, Don, thanks very much. I want to mention the website. Don is a member of the board of Creation Moments. Their website, creationmoments.com. And speaking of the biblical story of creation, there is a reservoir there, libraries, volumes, archives of scientific information that supports and explains the biblical story of creation. It amplifies it from the context of the history presented in Genesis, for example. So we recommend a visit, creationmoments.com. You can link to it from our site at Broken Road Radio. Go to our podcast page and you'll see a link there. Don, thanks very much. Appreciate the explanation. And we'll look forward to next week. I hope you get over your cold. I got to thank you for sticking with us through this. I know you're not feeling real well, so appreciate that.
Well, I was feeling worse yesterday, so if we hit this program yesterday, I would have canceled.
Wow.
But I am better this morning.
I'm glad we caught you. Take care. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.